My fellow Americans, I come to you today with a heavy heart. Here comes the Colonel.
Oh, yeah. More humor on this serious science program. Well, welcome back to the second half, The Promise of Tomorrow, here on the Science News Radio Network, where we explore the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. We're going to get back to our discussion with Ari Perlinger, a professor of the School of Criminology and Justice Studies, in just a little bit. Of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set. Rummage around in the coin jar just a minute, because we've got to pay the spirit of the fountain and see if he will answer today's query.
Welcome to the fountain of useless information. How can I...
Yes. We see we have awakened the spirit of the fountain. Who knows all? Hears all, sees all, and tells all. For a price, that's the reason we, had to throw in the coins. Anyway, all right, oh, Spirit of the Fountain. 17th century, we're going to go back to the 17th century, astronomer Johannes Kepler. He was accused of having never taken in his life. What 17th century astronomer, Johannes Kepler, accused of never having taken in his life, O Spirit of the Fountain? This is one you should be very familiar with.
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell the other.
Oh, the Spirit of the Fountain knows, and is familiar with this himself. What 17th century astronomer Johannes Kepler accused of never having taken in his life? Yes, a bath. He's accused of never in his life taking a bath. All right. Enough triviality. Back to our program. We have in line Dr. Ari Perlinger. He's professor of the School of Criminology and Science Studies at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell. He was director of terrorism studies at West Point at one time, and is an authority on politics of the far right in Israel. And when we got on that subject in the earlier part of the program, before the break, we were concerned because there are Israel has announced, Netanyahu has announced that there's going to be 2,500 new homes being built on Arab land from Israel going to the West Bank. And Perlinger has some pretty interesting ideas on that, and he talks about it with us.
The Israeli far right is really a religious far right. If you're looking into all the far right groups in Israel that perpetrated a violent act, you'll see that the great majority of them, if not all of them, were basically driven by clearly a religious fundamentalist ideology. In many ways, basically, there is these militant activists truly believe that annexing the West Bank and ensuring Israel control of the West Bank is a part of some kind of religious holy process or a redemption process that will end up eventually with the creation of a Jewish kingdom. And for them, giving up land, especially parts of the West Bank, is something which is unacceptable. For them, it's something which is against God's will, and they are willing to do anything, in their eyes, anything that is necessary in order to prevent that. So so in looking at violent manifestations of the Israeli far right, we are talking mainly about, again, religious groups that have a religious vision regarding the future of the state of Israel. They believe that the Israeli victory in Israel's wars of independence, the great Israeli victory in 1967, and the future, and the Israeli military achievements in the following years were all parts of God's plan. That's their view, and they believe that this plan also includes the continuous expansion of the Jewish state, including controlling the West Bank, which these are, historically, these are the areas where the ancient Hebrew were residing. And many of them also believe that it eventually will also include the rebuilding of the Jewish temple in you know, in Jerusalem on Temple Mount. So they see any attempt to reach some kind of agreements with the Palestinians, which will include territorial concessions, they see that as acting against God's will, and they believe that they need to act against it.
There seems to be a powerful notion in Israel, a powerful commitment, a powerful feeling among these far right in Israel of a single state solution. And Donald Trump is nominated our ambassador to Israel, one who also believes that a two-state solution is not going to be the solution. But won't that continue the terrible conflicts in the Middle East? And how is Israel going to reconcile being having all the land from the Mediterranean to the West Bank of the Jordan River, also be a democracy, and be a Jewish state? I some of us have trouble seeing how they're going to do all that.
Yeah, and now I'm expressing my personal view. I tend to agree. I think it's impossible to reconcile that, and I think that any solution that aims to maintain the democratic nature of Israel, as well as its identity as a Jewish state, will need to include concessions, territorial concessions. I think there's no other solution than the two-state solution. Eventually, I think all the parties that are involved in the conflict understand that the only viable solution is a two-state solution that hopefully will peacefully coexist in the land of Israel or in Palestine. And I think that this is the challenge. I think one of the issues is the fact that the Israel disengagement from the Gaza Strip didn't go so well. The disengagement didn't trigger a peace process, or didn't push forward the peace process, but actually eventually led to a series of military confrontations between Israel and Hamas in the Gaza Strip. And I think, regardless of what do you think about the disengagement, in the eyes of many Israelis, that was basically a test. And what they saw, at least in the perception of many Israelis, that okay, we gave up lands, and the Palestinians used this land in order to further conduct violent acts against us. So why should we give more land in the West Bank? Regardless if you agree with this perception or not, and I think there's many reasons to not to accept this perception, but this is the view of many Israelis. And I think that another reason that I think prevent Israel from moving forward towards such a two-state solution is the strong perception of many Israelis that the Palestinians are not sincerely willing to accept the existence of a Jewish state. I think many Israelis still believe that the Palestinians, or at least the Palestinian leadership, didn't really internalize the necessity to accept and to recognize the Jewish state. So they believe that, you know, that the Palestinians never abandoned their long-term, you know, aspiration to eradicate the state of Israel, and so on and so forth. So these are very, you know, these are perspectives or views that are fairly common among many Israelis, and that I think one of the challenges, to gain enough legitimacy for a two-state solution. Again, I do not necessarily agree with these views, but these are views that are in many ways are predominant within the Israeli society.
All right, well, we
explain some of the, yeah.
Yeah, going to say we've discussed then the politics of the far right in Israel among the Jewish community. We've discussed the elements of the fundamentalist jihadist in the Islamic community and Islamic states. What about we hear about the far right of the Christian community that is actually in Israel and in the Middle East trying to stir up problems between the fundamentalists of the Islamist and the fundamentalist of the Israelis. Do you find any evidence of that?
I didn't study that specifically. I know that there's again, I'm not an expert on this, but I know that there's some support, there's significant support for Israel within some segments of by some Christian movement here in the United States, mainly evangelicals. But this is something that it's not my areas of expertise. I've studied separately. I've studied the American far right, but I didn't really look specifically into the connection between the American far right and the Israeli far right.
So you don't believe this is a significant contribution then to the turmoil that is going on in the Middle East?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really.
All right. Well, you're a fascinating guest, and we're really looking forward to hearing your presentation at the IEEE International Conference on Homeland Security Technologies. It's going to go on the 25th and 26th of April. More on that at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link. Dr. Ari Perlinger is going to be presenting at that conference, and it's going to be just fascinating. What will be the takeaway, Dr. Perlinger? What is it that when you finish your talk concisely, what is the impression you want to leave with your listeners?
I want them to understand that cooperation between states is not really just about the threat that they are facing. It's about the nature of the states. Eventually, states decide to cooperate with countries, with societies that they believe they share similar values, similar attributes, and so on. It's really cooperation between states. It's really about the nature of the states rather than about the nature of the threat. So I think that's a good point to remember when we try to think about why states really decide to cooperate with each other.
Well, give us a look at the future. Look down the road 5 years, 10 years. Maybe we need longer. Maybe we need 20, maybe 30 or 40 years. But give us a peek down the road. What do you see as a future?
I think one thing to remember is not to lose perspective. I think terrorism is a significant threat. Terrorism is a policy problem that we'll need to deal with for the foreseeable future. But in most cases, terrorism is not an existential threat. And we need to remember that when we are trying to devise post-policy solutions. I think it's important to remember that we need to maintain our principles, our values, our set of priorities, while remembering that while terrorism can be a problem, can be something that we need to deal with and we'll need to invest resources in order to counter it. At the end of the road, terrorism, especially for countries such as the U.S. and most Western countries, is not an existential threat. It may have some significant impact on societal dynamics, and it may have some impact on economic growth and so on. But we faced worse threats than that, and I think maintaining some perspective is always useful when you're dealing with these kind of challenges.
All right, Dr. Perlinger, you've had many students that you're mentoring there as a professor of the School of Criminology and Justice Studies at University of Massachusetts, and back when you were with the Military Academy at West Point, and you've also been mentored in that sort of thing. How about words to live by? Is there a certain creed or a certain belief that you have, or something that you drive home succinctly to your students?
Knowledge is important, and I think understanding the threat and understanding its different facets and dimension, and maintaining maintaining a critical perspective perspective on it, I think, help us to eventually also to come up with effective policy solutions. So I think eventually it starts with really gaining a deep understanding of the threats, a deep understanding of the factors that trigger these threats, and that will eventually will enable us to come up with policy solutions. Unfortunately, especially in on the issue of terrorism, there's a lot of misconceptions, there's a lot of biased perceptions, and I think sometimes they prevent us from developing, you know, effective response to this threat. So, you know, gaining knowledge, gaining understanding, and acting on it, it's an important element of eventually understanding how we can deal with this threat more effectively.
Dr. Ari Perlinger, professor of the School of Criminology and Justice Studies at the University of Massachusetts at Lowell. It has been absolutely a great honor to have you on the program. We appreciate it so much. We're going to look forward to seeing you at the IEEE International Conference on Homeland Security Technologies that's going to go on the 25th and 26th of April at the Westin Hotel in Waltham, Massachusetts. That's Boston. And we'll look forward to seeing you there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, yes, the weeks were gearing up to the IEEE 2017 International Conference on Homeland Security Technologies, going to be April 25th and 26th. The spring coming up at the Westin Hotel in Waltham, Massachusetts, and of course that's Boston. This is a famous and historic international conference on homeland security technology gaps. Key technical gaps are going to be closely examined, as they are every year. Experts gather from all over the world to confer to frame the challenges in protecting homeland assets. This year, the keynote speaker is Kay Goss, President of the World Disaster Management, and the technical program is all about emerging technologies in cybersecurity, land and maritime border security. There's biometrics and forensics. More biometrics all the time. It's getting to be really a very, very interesting subject of the show. Attack and disaster preparation, of course, and recovery and response. And, of course, strategy and threat characterization. ConOps is in it. Risk analysis, modeling, simulation, experimentation, and exercises in training, plus test beds, standards, performance, and evaluation. Sponsored by the Massachusetts Port Authority, one of the sponsors of the event, and they do a lot of buying of Homeland Security hardware and software, because it's a very sensitive thing to keep the port of Massachusetts, safe and secure. And high traffic networking. So if you attend, you'll be able to interact with other key attendees, and expect to see government officials, systems integrators, research laboratories, small businesses, academic institutions, industry leaders, and investors. One of the key developers of the conference is Fausto Molinette. He is the founder of Matrix Corporation, and he's in Boston. We spoke with Fausto not too long ago on how the show came together in the first place, and here is a portion of that conversation. All right, now I want to change gears here just a little bit. You're really involved with a very successful homeland security conference that takes place in Boston every year. Were you at the beginnings of that? Were you part of the formulation early?
Yes, I was. There were several of us here in the Boston section who recognized after the 2001 attacks in New York and Washington that there needed to be a stronger emphasis on technology solutions to assist in homeland security. It's not the only thing that makes homeland security work, but technology solutions are very important. And so we said, let's come up with something that will introduce those kinds of technologies that are being developed for 3 to 5 years from today to be deployed. We would like to have a conference that will showcase those technologies, that will bring together people from the Homeland Security sector to talk about what they need, to take a look at some of these solutions, see whether or not they'll work, give inventors and early stage entrepreneurs and companies that are doing advanced research in this area an opportunity to present what they're doing. We were surprised that it took off. Well, maybe not surprised is not exactly the right word. We knew there was a need for that, but it took off pretty well. We got more papers than we expected for our first conference, and the numbers have grown beyond our expectations pretty much every year since then. And we've grown from about 100 people at the first conference up to nearly 500 now, and the participation is international in scope. We've had people from Poland to China and all countries in between attending and presenting. We hear from leading technology companies like Raytheon down to two guys across the kitchen table with an idea for detecting liquid explosives. So it just runs the gamut of pretty much everything, and it's an awful lot of fun to produce, and we feel it's helped a lot in introducing some of these people to the DHS market.
Yeah, I can imagine it's been a really fun thing to put together. And every year it's grown larger, and you say 500 people, but I think the point is these are very, very high-quality people. They're not tire kickers. These are really high-quality people that attend this event.
Right. That's true. We try to make sure of that. I mean, anybody can come that wants to attend, but we see a very high percentage of the people are those who are presenting the papers or perhaps offered us one that we didn't accept.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
I think when I was only like 5 years old, I decided to come to the United States, because I think this is definitely a land of hopes. And then for my career, it means opportunity, because the United States is definitely the driven force for the health care system as well as the medical research. We are definitely the leading driven force for that. Another important thing is that I think in the United States, we have a lot of opportunity for the researchers as well. But I have to say that during these years, because of the economy or because of the policy of the NIH, the researchers in the United States definitely face a lot of challenges in terms of funding. In order to keep all those exciting research going on, we have to have enough funding support. So back in the old days, and then United States definitely provide a good amount of and very generous support for the researchers. But unfortunately, during recent years, starting from 2008, and the NIH has trouble to support a lot of the researchers. So this is definitely the biggest challenge there we're facing. So we have challenge, but we definitely have hope. My name is Hong Li Wu. I am assistant professor at University of North Texas Health and Science Center.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.